I'd like to welcome you to this forum sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Grand Traverse Area. And we certainly appreciate the cooperation that we have with Garfield Township for allowing us to use this hall, and for Up North TV and Interlochen Public Radio for their involvement. As Inara said, I'm Ann Magoon, and I'll be your moderator this evening. The League of Women Voters is a trusted, nonpartisan political organization. Our members do hands-on work to safeguard democracy. We encourage citizens to actively participate in their governments and certainly to vote. If you're interested in learning more about the League, I encourage you to pick up some of our materials in the hallway or to speak with a League member after this forum. This evening, we have candidates for two legislative races, the 104th House and the 37th Senate. We want to make sure that every candidate has a chance to be heard throughout the forum. And in order to do that, we urge you to hold your applause until the end of the forum, to remain silent throughout the evening. That will help all of us. We are going to take written questions. That's the only kind of question that will be presented to the candidates. And every candidate will have a chance to respond. If you do have a question for the candidate, please write it on a card that has been provided. There's cards and pencils. Just raise your hand, give it to an usher when it's ready. You may ask more than one question, but please use a separate card for each one. The cards will be collected and screened for relevance, propriety, clarity, and legibility. If we can't read it, it won't be asked. We might not get to everybody's question tonight, but we will try to do so. And any question that is not asked that is legible and relevant and proper, we will collect and send to the candidates so they have an idea of what their constituents to be are thinking. The candidates will also be available afterward to mingle with you. So tonight's event will last for about 2 hours. It's being recorded for later broadcast by Up North TV, and that's Channel 97 in this area, and on Interlochen News Radio. I'd like to remind everyone to turn off your cell phones and any electronic devices. You will be able to take pictures if you want to. Have a picture of yourself with a candidate. After the forum concludes, please, no recording. Only credentialed media are to be doing any recording of tonight's event. We're going to start with 30-second opening statements by each candidate answering the question, why are you running for office? The opening statements will then be followed by questions from League members and the public. And for all of those questions, each candidate will have 1 minute to respond. We will use alphabetical order to get us started, starting with the 104th District House candidates. We'll give each candidate the opportunity to respond first. We'll end the forum with a 1 minute closing statement from each candidate, and that will start in reverse alphabetical order with the Senate candidates going in the opposite direction. Okay, so I think we're ready to get started. And the first question again is, why are you running for office, starting with Ms. Kofia?
Are they gonna give me a go sign?
No, you're on your own until they say stop.
Oh, they had the timer right there.
Ready, okay. Set, go. Right. I'm running because I believe that politics should belong to people, and that we have a situation in our country and our state where it has become about the biggest donors, those who can self-fund or get big donors to fund their campaigns seem to be the ones who end up in power, and that means that they are accountable not to the voters, everyday citizens, but to themselves or special interests. I'm running a campaign that is completely free of that. Every penny that comes into my campaign comes from an individual from Michigan, because that's who I want to go to work for every day, to work on roads, schools, jobs, the things that matter to everyday people.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman?
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. My name is Larry Inman, and thank you to the League of Women Voters and for hosting this event, and for everyone here that has taken time out of your busy schedule tonight to come down and visit with us. Grand Traverse County needs someone with real experience representing and fighting for us in Lansing. I believe relevant experience and knowledge of the public and private sector, along with my nearly 30 years of service in the community, will be instrumental in solving the issues facing us today. Most importantly, I'm running because I care deeply about this community. I appreciate the opportunity to show you that I am the most qualified candidate, not only in this debate, but as I go through the rest of the meeting, remaining part of the weeks, hitting doors, talking to voters, and televised events.
Thank you. Okay. Now for the 37th Senate District, Mr. Belfi.
Yes. My name is Dr. Phil Belfi. I'm a retired professor from Michigan State University, and I've lived up north for about 40-some years, although I can trace my native roots back 10 generations to Sault Ste. Marie. And I've been working on environmental issues, justice issues, equality issues, social justice issues for over 40 years, and I see that all the work that I've done being reversed by the people in Lansing today. So I want to go down there and try to preserve what I've been working on for the last 40 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt?
Good evening. I'm State Representative Wayne Schmidt from the 104th District right here in Grand Traverse County. And I want to say thank you to the League for putting on this forum and debate and for all of you coming out this evening. It has been my pleasure to serve as your state representative for the last 6 years and as a county commissioner for 10 years prior to that. I think the work that we've achieved in Lansing in the past 4 years has put us on the right track moving forward so that the kind of life that I had growing up in Traverse City here is the same one that my wife and my two sons, 10 and 11, can enjoy also. I think I have the right mix of experience both at the state and local level and also private sector level to help get things done for the state.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Okay, now we're going to go on to the questions, and as I said, we're going to rotate who begins. So I will address this question first to Mr. Inman. He will have 1 minute, and then everyone following will have up to 1 minute to respond as well. What more could the Michigan legislature do to promote the creation of well-paying jobs statewide? Mr. Inman?
As the chairman of the Northwest Michigan Council of Governments, we are working with the governor's office directly on his prosperity board initiatives, and those initiatives are directly targeted towards creating new jobs, high-paying jobs, careers for individuals, as well as providing a safety net for individuals that happen to lose their jobs or if an employer happens to close down. And we're focusing on individuals that we can retrain and replace in high-paying, good jobs. And I think it's important that the state take, you know, the combination of economic development along with the Prosperity Board to create new jobs and job training so our people have an ability to get a high-quality paying job. We also have to attract employers back to the state. And we need to provide some incentives on an economic basis to get them back here, many of them that have left over the last 10 years. So it's important for the students of the universities that are graduating to have these jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Mr. Belfi?
Well, I know that the jobs is the biggest issue that face people in the state and, of course, in the country and all over the place. My first priority is to preserve the jobs that we have here in northern Michigan. I'm not going to be focused on the state of Michigan. I'm going to be focused on the 37th State Senate District. We are the most environmentally sensitive district in the state. We're the most tourist-impacted district in the state. And if we don't have a clean and green environment, then there's no reason for employers to be here or people to live here. So that's my number one priority, is maintain the jobs we have. Secondly, we should be moving as quickly as we can to a alternative energy environment. We can create huge numbers of jobs, building the wind towers, maintaining them, putting up solar voltaic, whatever it takes. And this is not some kind of dream world. I live in Sault Ste. Marie, and across the river in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, they call themselves the alternative capital of North America, alternative energy capital. It can be done this far north. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt?
Well, some of the things that we've focused on the past 4 years serving as your state legislator is, one, making Michigan a better place to do business, simplifying the tax code, getting rid of the onerous Michigan business tax, simplifying workmen's compensation, making sure that business can afford to do business here, and preserving the jobs that already exist. Two, addressing our transportation needs. And again, this all focuses on northern Michigan, the eastern Upper Peninsula. We understand that without a good transportation network, whether we're moving our agricultural products, the manufacturing that we do have up here, and we're fortunate, we still have about 25 to 30% of our economy does include manufacturing, and also tourism. And the third is continued increase in education funding. We've seen that being strengthened the past 4 years. And so with those three prongs, I think we can continue to bring Michigan back and also bring back the jobs here to the 37th Senate District.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Kofia?
I don't believe you can talk about Michigan's economy and our future without talking about education. I've knocked over 3,000 doors all over this county. I started in April when the snow finally melted. Remember that? And I'm hearing from parents and young people who are buried in student loan debt, an entire generation who can't buy a home, who can't buy a car, who can't start a business and start hiring folks. Their entrepreneurship is being held back. A lot of the jobs, one of the fastest growing job sector in Michigan right now is the fast food industry. You know, we need to look at the fact that the state has disinvested in our public colleges and universities dramatically. I worked three jobs to put myself through college several years ago, and I don't think I could do it today with how much college tuition has gone through the roof. We talk a lot about investing in our young people and our future, but the numbers say something else. We need to reverse course and actually invest in our young people. College tuition, and that's not even touching on the cuts that K-12 education has continued to sustain. So we've got to talk about both.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Okay, we're going on to the second question, and just to give you a heads up here, Mr. Belfi will begin. Campaign finance reform has been an ongoing issue. How would you change our present system, if at all? Mr. Belfi.
Well, it'd be nice if I could change it all. I could just do a magic wand thing, but obviously I would only have one vote down in Lansing. And unfortunately, the situation down there right now is they just increased the amount of money that they can collect from their wealthy donors. So I would love to see a publicly financed system. I don't know if that's ever going to be possible, but we need to level the playing field, get the big money out of our campaigns, and try to get back to a more grassroots thing where people actually are the ones who are in charge and not the corporations.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt?
I have always believed in transparency, and when we did look at the individual giving limits, it was all very transparent. As we enter into filing campaign finance reports coming up here, close of books, this Sunday, we begin the period of 48-hour reporting of contributions. I believe that we can strengthen our campaign finance through increased transparency and would favor certainly more reporting for committees to elect, the CTEs, which is our standard accounts here in Michigan, whether it's that or any of our leadership funds. Those are all online. You can go to the Secretary of State website and see all of my donors and what the money I've spent.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Kofia?
This is really the primary reason that motivated me to step up and run in the first place, because I see, as I believe most of you do, and what I am hearing again on all of those doorsteps is people are feeling that the system is not accountable to them anymore and that their elected representatives are working for someone else, not them. They're getting a return on investment on their biggest donors. We've seen a series of devastating Supreme Court decisions in the last few years that have uncapped the amount of money that can flood into our political process, much of it dark money. We don't even know who the donors are. Advocacy groups are allowed to spend just unlimited amounts of money, and that is not reported per campaign finance law. So this is a bipartisan effort. Ruth Johnson, our current Republican Secretary of State, has proposed a disclosure law so that every penny that is spent on Michigan elections is fully disclosed. That is not currently the case. That's just the beginning. I am running a campaign that is completely financed the way I actually think it ought to be done. Every penny from an individual from Michigan, we've raised $57,000. We had a woman who's in her 80s come in and give $5 yesterday.
Thank you, Ms.
Our campaign
Kofia
belongs to people.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman.
Yes, to a certain degree, I agree with a comment from the previous speaker. There has to be some major changes in campaign finance laws. I was in a primary race where two individuals received outside money in excess of $50,000 each that was non-reportable. And, you know, that's an undue burden on other candidates. It really is. It doesn't give a level playing field. Let's just face it. So those things should be outlawed. And they're not even reportable, as the last candidate indicated. We need to make those changes. PACs, for example, Northern Michigan University, they gave me $500. The Michigan Township Association, they gave me $500. I accepted those donations because I'm closely affiliated with them. I trust them and like them. And I know my integrity will not be bought. If any PAC had contributed money to me and demanded that I vote their way because I gave them money, I would put my checkbook out and give them the money back. I think limited PAC money is fine, but it can't be overwhelming in your overall campaign finance report.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Next question, Mr. Schmidt will take first. Women's issues have been a focus of national concern in recent years. How will you represent the interests of the women of Michigan?
Well, that's a very broad and general question. I think the best thing that we can do here in Michigan, whether it's men or women, is to make sure that our educational system is strong, that we give everyone an opportunity for a good education, both public and private, and also moving forward, community colleges and universities. Going also with the economy, making sure that all people have an opportunity for a good job, the ability to raise a family. And I think that's the best way, treating everyone as an individual and moving forward. That's, whether you're a man or a woman, I think that it's important that everyone have an equal opportunity in Michigan. So I think strengthening the economy and education would serve well for both.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Kofia?
Women in Michigan make 74 cents on the dollar for their equally educated and equally experienced male counterparts. That means it's April before women sort of catch up from the past year of what their male coworkers make. Michigan has the seventh largest pay gap in the country. This is very much a real issue, especially when you know also that the majority of individuals in poverty are women and children. This is a family issue. This impacts breadwinners. This impacts the future of our kids. I believe we need to pass legislation that really deals with the wage inequity and hold our companies accountable. It's interesting, too, this legislature, when we talk about education and making sure everybody has an equal chance, this legislature has voted over and over again to go after workers' ability to collective bargain, which is one of the areas in Michigan where women actually do make equal pay to their male counterparts, and they have decimated workers' rights in the last few years. So I think we need to reverse course and start strengthening women and our pay opportunities instead of backwards, which is what we've been doing.
Thank you. Mr. Inman?
You know, this whole movement really was started from my history with Amelia Earhart and her promotion for careers for women and careers at Purdue University. She was on staff back in 1928 and 1930s. We have not done enough to support women in careers in our society. I had a particular issue with me being the chairman of the Council of Governments, where we went through a selection process for the next CEO, and we selected Elaine Wood. And we did a comparison study for individuals that did her responsibility, and there was actually, to my surprise and shock, a debate on the board as to what the fairness of the pay should be for her, because there were some older people that were set that, you know, women should not be making that kind of money, and they were public about it. And I was insulted commanded that, you know, we set the salary for the person, whether she's a woman or a man. She deserves the respect of the board and to be paid equally as same as men. I think people need to be aware of these things. And if there's any inequities for women right now in jobs, we need to correct it in the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Ms. Kofia, question will come to you next. After Mr. Belfi has a chance to respond.
Got a chance.
Okay, thank you. I only got a minute, so I'm not going to repeat everything that Betsy said, because everything she said is what I would like to say. But I'd also like to add, as far as being an environmentalist, I'm also a feminist. I've been endorsed by the National Organization for Women, and I was actually a founding member of a now chapter in the Eastern Upper Peninsula. And like I said in my introduction, I've been working on these issues for 40 years, more than 40 years. And I see the people in Lansing reversing all of the progress that we've made. And it's not been very much, but I hate to see it being reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Ms. Kofia, what do you feel is the biggest issue facing public education in Michigan?
There are so many huge issues facing public education in Michigan. It really is not hyperbole to say we are at a state of crisis with our funding. And I'll give you an example. I was reviewing financials put forward by Paul Soma, our interim superintendent for Traverse City Public Schools, and I had to read this three times. TCAPS is actually facing the possibility of bankruptcy in just two more years if we continue on the cuts to public education funding and classroom funding that this legislature has enacted over the last several years. Our kids are at 2009 levels of classroom funding, and that's not even beginning to scratch the surface of the fact that our kids in TCAPS and Kingsley get the lowest per pupil funding in the state. That has been allowed to continue for decades. I was hearing about it 15, 12 years ago when I was an editor of a newspaper. They were talking about it then. It's only gotten worse. We've cut to the bone. We have got to get our heads straight about funding our kids' education. We're going the wrong direction.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman?
I'm glad you brought that subject up because that's one of my top three issues that I've been campaigning on. And I have, as I'm going door-to-door, have said very vividly that when I get down to Lansing, I want to make sure that we correct the inequity of funding for schools in the state of Michigan. It is outrageous that the downstate schools get $1,200 more per student than the ones up here in Traverse City. We need to correct that. We need equity. We need fairness and equity from the state. We need to find the money to do it. And it's unfair for this particular school district up here because they're going to be short in funds. So that therefore, they've got to go out and ask for operating millages. They have to go out and ask for capital millages. They have to attract good teachers, pay them compensation that they deserve. And it's very difficult when you have those kinds of shortfalls per student and try to maintain a quality education and quality teachers, and that equals to quality testing and good grades and people moving out of universities, and it all comes together. So,
thank you, Mr. Inman.
Thank you.
Mr. Belfi.
Well, the legislature, of course, enacted a $1.6 or $1.8 billion tax cut. In order to make up that difference, there's three areas that were cut. Number one was cut school funding. Number two, higher ed funding. And number three, revenue sharing. All of these things hurt our local economies. And I know that the legislature is going to tell you, no, we've increased the funding. But it's not true. Go to the House Fiscal Agency, and it tells you that per student funding has gone down, and it is down, and it has to be reversed. And I taught at Michigan State University and other universities, and I would have to tell my students, your education is underwater. The state has fallen down, and they have decided that they're going to defund the schools and try to put it on the backs of the students. And as Betsy said earlier, you can't afford it. It's ruining our economy. It is destroying jobs. All these cuts, money that should have been put into our local economies is no longer there.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt.
There's three parts to this question on school funding. First, for Northern Michigan, we must reverse the decline of the number of students in Northern Michigan. We must reduce the families leaving Northern Michigan. For the 10 years in 2000, we saw a decrease in population and the number of school-aged children. That has hurt Northern Michigan dramatically. If you just look at Charlevoix, 400 students over the last 10 years. Two, we must address the retirement issue. We saw the non-funding of the pension. I will give you the last 2 years of Engler and during the Granholm administration. That was a question we had to address when Governor Snyder came in. We did that. We've increased funding for education on a per-pupil basis. We've seen it go up. We've seen the pension fund being properly funded now, and on the last 3 years, on the foundation allowance, we have seen the inequality decrease. We've had 3 years now of funding increases on the per student allowance. So we've begun to address that, and we've also started to put more money back into community colleges and into higher education.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Inman, we'll begin with you on this question.
Okay, go ahead.
Currently, there is a 60-year-old pipeline carrying crude oil that runs under the Straits of Mackinac, bringing oil to Sarnia, Ontario. Mm-hmm. What action will you take to help ensure the safety of Michigan waters?
Well, when I first – that's a great topic. It just came out in the paper, and it was a very informative article. And I am deeply concerned about a very aged pipeline in those straits. And we've got to make sure as legislators and representatives of the people here that there is no downturn in terms of leaks or catastrophes in oil into our Great Lakes or the Straits. It would be just a complete disaster of our whole economic and our natural resources. So we're going to have to make sure that that pipeline is in proper maintenance condition. And I think the broader question is, should it really come out? Should it really be there? Should it really belong there? And shouldn't we have like an alternative system to provide, you know, energy or power to a neighboring, country or land or whatever? But I really question that, the future need and use for, you know, oil underneath the Great Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Mr. Belfi.
I announced my campaign on April 22nd, 2014, which is Earth Day, and I announced my campaign at the bridge at Mackinac City, and I announced my campaign for double wall or not at all, dealing with that Enbridge pipeline. The state can do something. They're wringing their hands down there, and Lansing's saying, no, it's a federal issue, but it's not. There's an easement that was issued to that company in 1953, and there's a law, 1955. Both of those are not being complied with, and we should be able to force them to comply with that law. Also, the Oil Pollution Act of 1990 doesn't explicitly make this clear, but as a response to the Exxon Valdez, that pipeline should be double wall or not at all. It's got to have a containment. On January 1st, 2015, that pipeline is out of compliance with federal law. So there's lots of things we can do, and we should not be putting our entire economy and our entire way of life at risk simply to send some oil to Sarnia.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt.
Growing up in here in northern Michigan, living just a couple of blocks from the bay, it is very critical that we protect our natural resources. Have been working with the Attorney General's Office, the DEQ, the DNR, to make sure that the pipeline under the straits is in compliance with federal law. It is ultimately a federal issue. We have made sure, working with our congressional delegation, that Enbridge is in there. The reports that I've reviewed, working with, again, our federal congressional delegation, that it is in compliance, that our scientists and engineers say that it is still structurally sound, that everything is fine. But that does not mean, though, that we do not remain vigilant, that we do not work for alternatives, other options, and different technologies for our energy sources. But it is still ultimately a federal issue.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Kofia?
It is first and foremost and primarily the responsibility of the Great Lakes State to take care of the Great Lakes. And Michigan does hold that easement. I believe we are the primary guardians and that the state elected officials have a sacred obligation to the people of Michigan to safeguard the Great Lakes. A couple things about the company that owns that pipeline built during the Eisenhower administration. It was expected to last 50 years, first of all. So it's 61 years old. They have increased oil flow just in the last two. And this is the same company that is responsible for major oil spills all over this country, including nearly 1 million gallons spilled into the Kalamazoo River just 3 years ago. We're still cleaning up the oil. Folks, that pipeline spilled for 17 hours. And don't imagine what that would look like in the Straits of Mackinac, even minutes, especially in the winter under ice. I mean, this is a catastrophe beyond imagination. The devastation to land value, property value, to the entire economy, the tourist economy, Mackinac Island. Shepler's ferry owner just spoke out and said, this cannot happen. We need to step up and hold this company accountable.
Thank you, Ms.
Kofia. And it needs to come out.
Mr. Belfi, I'll address this to you first. How will you hold yourself accountable to your constituents once elected? Please be specific.
Specific? Well, if you go to my website, philbelfi.com, you'll see a statement on there that says, I'm not a politician like other politicians. I'm going to go to Lansing. I'm going to work for 99% of the people 100% of the time. And what I say I'm going to do down there, I'm going to do it. And I know a lot of people say, well, I'm just going to say all these nice things to you and not really make any promises, so then you'll elect me and send me down there. I can do whatever the hell I want. That's not me. I have a position on every issue, and you can go to my website, and you can find it there, and you can read it there, and you can hold me accountable, and I hope you do.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt?
Been held accountable to the voters of Grand Traverse County for 16 years. My phone number's in the phone book there on Washington Street. My cell phone hasn't changed since I got married in 2000. I know many of you have it. I've had a number of primaries in my time, both on the county board and as a state representative. You know, my door is open, met with many, many groups, whether I have agreed with them, disagreed with them, but always willing to listen. And so that's, you know, again, that's the best way. Come November 4th, I will be held again accountable to you, the residents of Grand Traverse County and the 37th Senate District.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Kofia?
I'll be at your door, knocking on your doors, just like I've been doing for the last many months, standing on your doorstep, asking you what's important to you as voters. I intend actually to continue. You know, you're down in Lansing for a legislative session for a couple days a week, but then you're back home in your district. And it is imperative to me to continue knocking on folks' doors, attending community meetings, meeting with our local elected officials and asking them for their perspective. It's much more important to me what the local sheriff and county commissioners and, you know, what they see as important than the lobbyists that swarm around our electeds like flies. Right now, I am accountable to the people of this district and this state. I have structured my campaign specifically that way because I believe we need and deserve no less. That is the kind of representation and service you will get from me.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman?
Well, I want to make it clear that I've spent the last 22 years knocking on doors, not 1 year. And I have appreciated the public comment, the input from the public that I've received. Being in elected office for the Grand Traverse County Board of Commissioners for that period of time. I think the hallmark of how people feel about me is I hope they believe that I'm open, transparent, responsive, and that I always have a personal policy that I return phone calls, and I meet with media, the public, seek public input, always available to talk and get opinions from the public. And I think that as an elected official for 22 years, I believe I've demonstrated that quite clearly.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Beginning the next question for Mr. Schmidt. Last year, Grand Traverse County enacted a new tax on property to help make up for state budget cuts and help pay for county road repairs. Proposals have floated about in Lansing for years to raise the state gas tax, which has not been increased in 20 years. What is your position on this?
Well, one, I supported the county road millage. I felt that it was best that Grand Traverse County control its destiny and where it chose to spend its money. As far as reforming how transportation funding goes, I am the chairman of the House Transportation Committee, and we put forth a package of bills done in a bipartisan fashion that dedicated nearly $500 million on ongoing monies, in addition to the nearly $1 billion that we've put in from the state budget, including general fund monies. One of the things that we did, we had savings and saw increased revenues because of the economy, $230 million in extra monies. $35.5 million of those dollars came to northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula. $5.5 million of that came to specifically Grand Traverse County. But as far as the package of bills, it included reforms warranties to make sure you, the taxpayer, knew what you were getting. It included diesel parity to make sure that trucks paid their fair share, dealt with oversized, overweight truck issues, again, to make sure they pay their fair share, and worked on readjusting how we tax gasoline so that it can continue with the construction building index.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Kofia?
This is obviously, you know, if you ask me what's the one thing that comes up more than anything else at Doors, it's the roads. Shocker, right? We're all driving on them every day, and it's costing the average Michigan family $300 in car repairs a year because of the state we've allowed our roads to get into. So everybody agrees something needs to be done. The problem has been getting some action on really repairing our roads. I hesitate to talk about raising the gas tax on everyday working people, you know, knowing that in my district, women's average wage is $21,000 or so a year, men's is 30-something a year. Families are hurting, and they have just had their income taxes raised by this legislature in the last few years. We've eliminated the per child tax credit, the homestead property tax credit. We're taxing pensions. A lot of folks are having a really tough time making ends meet. So I want to look at shared responsibility and make sure the overweight trucking industry is paying its fair share. That's where I would start. Right now in Michigan, we allow the heaviest trucks in the country, and we allow them for a $50 fee. That's it. Neighboring states charged up to eight times what
Thank
we do.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Belfi? I'm sorry, Mr. Inman?
Okay. You know, this is a real passionate issue for me going down to Lansing, and I've told the leadership the number one thing I want to deal with when I go down there is roads. And, you know, Governor Granholm, during her administration, had a Blue Ribbon Committee that did an extensive evaluation of our road systems, and it came up with a number of superior recommendations and options for us to take a look at for current and immediate repairs of our roads and long-term solutions. And unfortunately, you know, the legislature has done some things increasing on roads, but we haven't come to a long-term solution. We haven't come to a short-term solution. And so it's frustrating on my part that we have not, as a state, come up with a fix on this thing. I hate taxes. I'm a person that really doesn't care for increasing taxes. But let's face it, folks, there isn't enough money to fix our roads. So we're going to have to find the money somewhere. It's going to have to come from the general fund. We're going to have to maybe look at a small tax increase in our gas tax. Number two, the federal tax that we're paying at our pump goes to Washington. We're a donor state. Guess what?
We've got
to be calling our congressman and getting that money back.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Mr. Belfi.
Well, I've been saying all the way through my entire campaign, there is no revenue problem in Lansing. We have a spending priority problem. They could find $1.8 billion to give a tax break to big business. They found another $590 million in Proposal 1 that we voted on in August. There's plenty of money sloshing around in Lansing. And I never thought I would ever have the opportunity to say this, but we have big government, big tax Republicans in charge of this state. I am absolutely 100% opposed to raising any more taxes from the middle class. We just had our taxes raised, and now they want to raise it again to pay for the roads? These people are crazy. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Ms. Kofia, this will come to you first. What should we do to keep Canada from dumping waste in Michigan?
Say no. We're in charge of our borders. That is, I don't care what price they're willing to pay or how it might benefit some special interest company that can receive that waste and make a profit off it. Absolutely not. And I will add to that, we need to say no to the fracking waste that's illegal in places like Pennsylvania where they're actually generating it and they're shipping it to us. You know, coal ash. Michigan is not a dumping ground. We are the Great Lakes State. We need to take care of our natural resources. They need to figure out what to do with their waste someplace else.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman?
I feel the same way. If I was elected, I would absolutely terminate that agreement with Canada. You know, the whole thing about preserving our natural resources, especially here in northern Michigan and Grand Traverse County, has been a priority of the Board of Commissioners. And, you know, the recycling program, using alternative energy, all these concepts are going to improve our environment moving forward. Let's face it, we have one Earth. one water system, and we're here to preserve our land, not only for us, but for the future of our children and children and their children. And bringing in waste and throwing it in the ground is not the answer. We should eliminate this agreement and let Canada figure out what to do with their own waste.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Mr. Belfi?
Well, I would just echo what Betsy says. Just say no. The legislature is in charge, not only of the borders, but of our waste stream, and we can just pass a law that says no. But I also want to mention the fracking waste. I'm not going to go into all the details because I only got a minute, but I filed a suit in the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians a couple weeks ago to enforce the prohibition against the use of our fresh water for fracking. Because when they get that water back out of that well, it is waste, and it is against the law to waste our water. So, as Mr. Inman says, we are the protectors. In my native tradition, we talk about seven generations. That's why we're here, to preserve the environment for the next seven generations, and we cannot allow waste, whether it's fracking waste or coke material, pet coke, etc. It's got to stay out of the Great Lakes, got to stay out of Michigan, got to stay out of our environments and out of our bodies.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt.
Looking at the waste issue between Michigan, Ontario, and Canada as an entire country has been one that's been looked at since 2006. The tipping fees could be adjusted. That's fine. But we also need to remember that Michigan exports its waste also to Ontario, and that two-way negotiation must exist. Some of the waste that we do bring in for recycling purposes, as we look in, for the need and the processing of certain waste, we do want some of that to come here because there is a need for those materials for recycling. We've seen that when we're working on our recycling projects here in northern Michigan for a number of the ironworks and such. We actually don't have enough of those items up here. But that doesn't mean to say, though, that we should take everything that Canada sends our way, just as they don't take everything we send their way. So it is a negotiation. Trash, the standard that we generate in a household, is a commodity, whether you like it or not. We're not talking here about, you know, hazardous materials, although that's what we send over to Canada, is much of our biomedical waste. And so, you know, we don't want it here necessarily. They're willing to take it in trade. We can take some of their household waste.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Inman, this comes to you first.
Okay.
A few years ago, Michigan enacted a, quote, birth date, quote, tax on pensions. Anyone born before 1946 pays nothing, while anyone born after 1952 may pay taxes on every pension or $401 they receive. Taxing some while exempting others based solely on one's year of birth appears to be a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. How would you propose to remedy this inequity?
When this first came into law and I sat down with my CPA, I was absolutely shocked that the legislature did this. Retired folks counted on their various areas of income to enjoy their senior years, and now they find that they've got less money to live on, and have their pensions taxed where those pensions were not taxed before. People say there's a level of fairness problem in this because other types of retirements are taxed, but I still believe that we should go back and give those relief to those senior citizens that counted on that income when they retired. And let's face it, the prices of a lot of things are going up, gas, food, everything else, and it's a challenge for seniors to make ends meet now. I would repeal it.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Mr. Belfi.
Well, there's one easy solution that the Republicans will probably want to propose. Let's just tax everybody, including my Social Security. I'm not willing to go down that road. I would agree with Mr. Inman. It is unfair. People work their whole lives with the expectation they would have a pension when they retired. And let's face it, in many cases, that was the lure of the job. You accepted lower pay. You were expected to get your retirement when you finally did retire. So your whole life, your whole working life, you expected that money to be there. And I think it's, the word I like to use is shameful. It's just shameful that the legislature has done that.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt.
Well, first, on the issue of the constitutionality of the income tax on pensions, it was ruled by the state's courts to be constitutional. As far as I'm concerned, as long as there is a personal income tax in the state of Michigan, that everyone's income should be taxed, whether you are a family, a retiree, as we see with businesses that are subchapter S, LLCs. I go back to it is a fairness question. We did phase it in because those born before 1946 don't have the same opportunities. But as we graduated it into from 1952 on, it is a fair tax. And as I said before, as long as there's a personal income tax, everyone should pay that tax.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Kofia.
I support a repeal of the pension tax. I believe it is inappropriate. I've certainly heard from plenty of folks who, frankly, have said things like, we wouldn't have moved to Michigan for our retirement if we had known that our pension was going to be taxed. I think, it's important to look at the fact that our seniors, especially in this region, they generate a lot of the local revenue that's going into our economy. They frequent our businesses, our restaurants, and now they have less money to spend into the local economy. I think that the pension tax was wrong, and I would repeal it.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi, this will come to you first. Philosophically, what do you feel is the role of state government?
Well, and I have to apologize, I guess, for a lot of business people. I don't believe that I was asked a question by the chamber here. What's your pro-business proposal? And I said, I don't have one. I'm pro-people. That's who I want to represent. I don't want to represent businesses. I want to represent people. 99% of the people deserve our representation in Lansing. The 1% corporations, let's face it, they got plenty of votes because they got plenty of money. State Senate, there's only 12 Democrats. They don't need another vote. That is, the corporations don't need another vote. The people need a vote.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt?
I think one of the main roles, especially here for state government, and I'm going to take it in that sense, federal government is a completely different animal. For the state level, I think it's providing an educational opportunity for all of our citizens, if they choose to do that, both a K-12 and a higher education beyond that, whether it's community colleges or any one of our universities or colleges. I also believe that it's an important role on making sure that our transportation system is a sound one. It's ultimately up to the private sector to create jobs, to find what is best for its residents. We see here in Michigan, we're very blessed with our natural resources, so tourism is a natural economy here. Our agricultural opportunities, we've seen in the past 4 years that agriculture in Michigan has grown to roughly a $91 billion industry. So I think it's fostering an equal opportunity for all residents, whether they want to grow things, whether they want education, whatever they want to do. I think giving everyone that equal opportunity is what Michigan's role should be.
Thank you.
State government-wise.
Ms. Kofia?
A politician is a public servant. That's how it's supposed to be. They're there to serve, to protect the public health and welfare, and to protect our natural resources. That's a sacred obligation of our state representatives. They are there to make sure that our kids are getting the best possible education, which means funding our kids' education and creating an environment in Michigan where our teachers are treated well and want to be here, and we keep and attract the best and the brightest, which is the opposite of what we're doing right now. We're driving people away from this state. We have an obligation to make sure that we are giving our kids opportunities to get the best possible jobs, and I mentioned the tuition issue earlier. We need to invest in our colleges and universities and bring down tuition costs so that our kids can actually have a future instead of stunting an entire generation's economic capability. We have a responsibility as state government to be accountable for every penny of your tax dollars that we receive, and right now, as I mentioned earlier, there's a a gross lack of transparency and accountability in state government, in the way we fund elections. Frankly, even in lobbyist disclosures, we have a responsibility to serve, to be open, and to be transparent to the people of Michigan.
Thank you. Mr. Inman?
As a local elected official, we're always burdened with state and federal overregulation and rules, and we need to get government out of our lives so we can get on with the very important things of managing your family, managing your budgets. And I think the role really for state government is, you know, they got to step to the plate and say, we're going to find a way to fix our roads. We're going to have excellent school systems. We're going to be the best in the country. We're going to have quality jobs in Michigan. We're going to bring people back. We're going to help our veterans when they come back with their services and the medical things that they need, and treat them with respect when they come back. Get them jobs. Offer some incentives to get them jobs. Protect our environment, our natural resources. That's the role of the state. We down here in a local level, we're supposed to be partners in that, and let us work with them to accomplish those things.
Thank you. I've been notified that we have enough questions to get us through the evening, so if you'll just listen to the great variety we have. Okay, Mr. Schmidt, we'll start with you. What do you feel about guns in school, in schools?
Well, I'll just be straight up. I am an NRA-endorsed candidate, both in the primary and in the general election, and I am a firearm owner, shotguns for hunting. We did put together a bill. There was a bill that was sent over by Senator Mike Green from the Thumb area that would have addressed the issue on open carry, specifically in schools. Right now, you can open carry in schools, and that I didn't believe was the best way in terms of if you want personal protection or wish to carry a firearm in a school. So we came up with a bill that allowed for you to conceal carry in a school if you choose, but there was additional coursework and certification necessary to do that and would eliminate open carry in schools right now. You are allowed under state law that when you're picking up and dropping off students to have firearms on a educational campus, but I thought that was the best way to deal with that issue, and it did pass in a bipartisan fashion.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia.
You know, it was so interesting. I read recently that at the recent Republican state convention here in Michigan, something wasn't allowed, concealed or open carry, was prohibited. And I, as somebody who, when I was putting myself through college, one of the jobs that I worked for several years was a special ed assistant in TCAP schools. I have experienced lockdown drills. I have experienced huddling over little children in a dark classroom while you're hearing noises outside and not sure, is this real or is this a drill? It's not appropriate. I support common sense when it comes to our Second Amendment rights. They don't belong in schools. Secretaries, let me tell you, they got more than enough to do than have to look through, you know, when they're taking a child's temperature and on the phone with a parent and filing a report that's due in 5 minutes. They have enough on their plate without having to look and trying to figure out if that's a good guy with a gun coming through the door. I would also like to point out priorities. This state has disinvested in our public education to the point where the good guys with the guns who wear uniforms, our liaison officers, we can't afford them in our schools anymore. So those are some actions you would see me take when it comes to guns in schools. Uniformed officers, no conceal, no open.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman?
Yes, thank you. This was a real learning experience. When you become a candidate, you get all these questionnaires, and one of them I got from the National Rifle Association. And I thought, well, sure, they'll give me an endorsement. When I filled out the questionnaire, there were three key points that I missed, and I feel very strongly about it. And the fact that I did not get their endorsement does not bother me at all. The key questions, guns in schools, they're yes, I'm no. No registration for handguns. I'm like, what? That's what they want. No background checks on handguns. No. I flunked that whole thing, and I called them up and asked them, what's up? And they said, you answered these three questions wrong. There's no endorsement. And I said, I don't want your endorsement. There's a problem in our schools. There's weapons. There's guns. There's bullying. There's a misbehavior. We have made it a priority in Grand Traverse County to have our county officers in our school systems, and it has helped. But there is no long-term solution to other than you know, the family coming together and the school systems and making sure that we have
Mr.
a good
Inman.
Place for our school
Thank
people
you, Mr.
to
Inman. Mr. Belfi.
Go to.
I guess I'm the only person who is exercising his Second Amendment rights to bear arms. That's a joke. I don't have a gun. I'm not carrying one. It's not concealed, et cetera. I, like Mr. Inman, filled out all these questionnaires.
I guess we are too, though.
And I'm very happy to say that I got a zero rating from the Responsible Gun Owners of America. And when I filled that out, I said, I'm a responsible gun owner. I am a responsible gun owner. I own guns. And I got a zero rating from these guys. Guns have nothing to do in our schools. They shouldn't be concealed or open or anything. The kids don't have to be going into a situation where they think there may be some sort of problem. And I'm not even in favor of having the cops in the school to tell you the truth. We send our kids to schools to learn something. And what do you think they learn when they see a cop sitting there? This is a dangerous place. I got to be worried about it. How are they going to attend to their school, their education, when they have to deal with that kind of an environment? Sault Ste. Marie just passed a big millage, literally, and I taught at the prison up north, and I know exactly how it is. They turned our schools into prisons. Security cameras, all kinds of prison things.
Thank you,
it's
Mr.
not the
Belfi.
Way we should do it.
I'm going to interrupt myself here for just a moment. I think our candidates are doing a great job tonight because they have to think on their feet. All I have to do is read what's presented to me. I was presented with no more questions, and I thought that meant no more questions. It meant we need more questions. So I apologize for my last note. We need more questions. So keep coming. It'll have to go through a screener, sir, so she's coming to get it. Okay, thank you.
Excuse me.
Okay. Ms. Kofia.
Thank you.
What is the importance of the right to work law and the future of unions in our state?
Okay. Michigan is the birthplace of organized labor in this country, and there are people who literally fought, were killed in the 1920s and 30s for workers' rights to most of what we now enjoy today, or at least some of us are still enjoying today, you know, a 8-hour workday, overtime pay, not having children working long hours in factories. I couldn't believe it, and I could not believe my ears and eyes when I saw that this state had passed a right to work law. And this is a classic example of where incredibly powerful, incredibly wealthy folks try things one way. Dick DeVos ran for governor. We said no. But he twisted this legislature's arm, and they are trying to take away workers' rights to organize at a time when, frankly, I think workers need now more than ever the right to organize and bargain for fair pay and fair working conditions.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman?
Yes, I want to make a remark about right to work in terms of what the legislature did in this process. I mean, it's a very sensitive issue for unions and teachers, but the process that they used in the legislature, I really had a problem with, and it comes back to the roots at the county commission. And if we have a really important issue, we put a public process together, public opinion, public input, and to have this go down in the last minute and just pump this thing through, I didn't think it gave justice to, you know, enough notice to the public so we could have a debate on it. Now, right to work was put in with the intent that it would attract and retain employers to come back to Michigan. I'll just say that we'll find out if that is true or not moving forward. I will tell you that right to work has has not had that much of an effect in Grand Traverse County employment. We have 17 bargaining units. We have a great relationship with them. They bargain in good faith.
Thank you, Mr. Inman.
And it was worked out well.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi?
Well, as all the other candidates, I'm sure, will agree that we were inundated with questionnaires during the primary process. And when I would get one from a union, they would always ask that question. It's usually the first one. How do you feel about right to work? And my answer was always the same. On the first day in office, I will introduce legislation to repeal the right to work for less. What else can I say? Well, I will say one more thing. Maybe we can give some of those Republican legislatures the right to work for less on whenever we get inaugurated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt?
Passing the right to work legislation was a difficult process. We did see the ballot proposals. There was much legislation introduced. There was discussion on right to work. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it did pass, but it did not take away anybody's rights to organize, to collectively bargain, or anything along those lines. What it did was strengthen workers' decisions on whether or not they wished to belong to a union. So I felt that it became more of an issue of, do workers want to or not want to be a part of a union? And with that, it's still very contentious. I've received support from still many unions, the construction building trades, and other organizations.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. I'm going to remind the audience to please keep your opinions to yourselves, if you would. I think that's respectful for everyone in the room. We'll start this one with Mr. Inman.
Yes.
What will you do to address the issue of affordable housing in Michigan?
Well, I know that the state of Michigan and the federal government have an active program for affordable housing, and they have a number of programs that county and city and township governments have the ability to apply for. I think we need to keep those dollars flowing in. And affordable housing isn't a $200,000 home or a $300,000 home. That, you know, people can't afford those, and that's what we have in our community, unless you want to drive out, you know, 40 or 50 miles and live in a modular home. So, you know, there's a project over there on Woodmere that is going up. That is a real example of affordable housing. So I think the local governments, the state and the federal, really have to focus a little bit more on the needs of, you know, people just starting out in college with this debt and having an affordable place to live without driving out 50 miles to find a house.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi?
Well, I live in Sault Ste. Marie. And Sault Ste. Marie has a rather vibrant public housing, and it's not like in a ghetto situation, high-rise. They have the houses in various neighborhoods. And it seems to work very, very well. People are very, very happy with it. One of the biggest problems that we face, and I think it was the Reagan administration, I'm not exactly sure, but the federal government cut out a lot of the prospects for building low-income housing. They decided they'd rather put their money in the savings and loan industry or something. My uncle lived in a co-op housing unit in Farmington Hills. It was great. The government supported it to build the thing, and the people who lived there paid their monthly fees and their rents, et cetera. It was wonderful. My aunt and my cousin still live there. We could do a lot more. We have decided as a society that it's more beneficial, I guess, to cater to the wealthy people, the $200,000 homes, like Mr. Hinman says. We as a society have a responsibility to our poorer citizens, and we need to give them housing.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Schmidt?
One of the areas that Michigan can participate in is through MISHTA, and as committee chair of the Commerce Committee, we looked at reforming that and making sure that your tax dollars went to projects that truly created workforce-appropriate housing. And as we also look at strengthening our downtowns and neighborhoods, as we look at reforming our TIF districts, our DDAs, some of that legislation has been introduced, wanting to make sure that the opportunity, and again, that is one area that I think government does play a role in encouraging workforce-appropriate housing. We've seen those successes with brownfield redevelopment monies, with historical preservation monies, a variety of combinations of those type of dollars in what we've done over at the Old State Hospital, the Grand Traverse Commons, and offering a more, not just a tenement style or a segregated low-income housing, but mixing all different economic types together and offering different opportunities. So I would continue to encourage that, to strengthen our downtowns and our neighborhoods in making sure that we have workforce-appropriate housing.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia?
Sure. This is actually something I'm actively involved in as a private citizen. I'm part of a group called Project for Civic Engagement Northern Michigan, which is a nonpartisan group of citizens, and this is one of our front burner issues. We know that some local governments are meeting and talking about it, but it's not really open to the public. It's just local elected officials. We really think that people who are actually experiencing this, like many of the seniors I'm talking to who are saying, I can do the math. You know, my housing costs keep going up. I'm about to be priced out of living in my own home here in Traverse City where I've been for years. So we are actively meeting and talking about opportunities and options, creating a video that we're actually going to present to our local elected officials, giving some of the people who are actually experiencing this, college students, elders, some of our suggestions. Specifically, I'd like to work with communities on changing our zoning, making it more flexible for things like mother-in-law apartments, which could also be a revenue generation for someone who owns a home. Also to cut the red tape so developers can make a profit while providing mixed-income housing. They need to be able to make a profit, but there are things we can do if we bring the stakeholders together and make it a front-burner issue. It's easy to talk about it, but it's really important to take some action.
Thank you. Let me remind the audience, maybe some of you came in late, there's no recording of anything, video or audio, unless you're credentialed media. Thank you. Okay, we'll start with Mr. Belfi. How will the legislature support efforts to undo the hegemony of cars and help local governments create opportunities for cyclists on public roads?
Well, approximately 40 to 50% of all the cities are devoted to the automobile, driveways, streets, parking lots, etc. And it's created, obviously, a tremendous amount of congestion. When I was at Michigan State University, I bought a house that was 1 mile from my office. I never even got a permit for my truck. I walked or rode my bike. There are options, and people should have the opportunity for public transportation. We really need a lot more public transportation. Also, there's zip cars. We could move towards that type of a situation. But I think the major thing is we need public transportation that works and is affordable and available for everybody who needs to get from A to B.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
Public transit is a key component, especially in our urban areas, although I think we've done a good job here in rural northwest Michigan on providing public transit. I am proud to have been the public transit legislator of the year. It is an area. It's part of transportation, and I've worked hard. It has brought challenges sometimes, but I think it's a key component. I've also been a big proponent of complete streets. That doesn't mean, though, that every street needs a bike lane or that every sidewalk has to be 6 feet wide. But that we need to make sure that as we look at the grid system in our cities, here in Traverse City, for example, that we do go through the checklist, that we are accommodating different forms of transportation. Some streets could use improvement. Other streets have options, whether you're looking at 8th Street, which certain portions do need bike lanes, but other spots where you don't have the same right-of-way, you have the TART trail, you have the neighborhoods to go through, you do have sidewalks. So I believe that complete streets does provide a checkoff and allow us to focus to make sure that we cover all grounds. I also do not support diverting the DNR trust fund to our freeways and roads,
Thank
but rather
you,
keep
Schmidt.
It for our public transportation network.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia?
The biking community in this area in particular, part of it is, I think, thinking of it less as about, cars get the road and bikes get the sidewalk or trails or whatnot. I think it's important to look at the biking activity as the economic boost that it is to our region. It brings in millions of dollars into our region with things like the Iceman Cometh Race. People come from all over the country to bike the Vasa Trail, our TART Trail. So it's an economic stimulant to our area. I would like to. It also draws and keeps young professionals in our area who really prefer to bike and walk and be close to services. They're willing to settle for smaller living spaces to be close to things. So looking at it as an economic piece and really designing, incentivizing local communities at the state level to design their streets to actually accommodate and really welcome bikes and walking. The streets should belong to all of us, and I think that's a really important perspective to take in funding projects.
Thank you. Mr. Inman.
You know, our area has been, we're very fortunate to have elected officials that that recognize as we do a development that we encourage other forms of transportation. And the County Board of Commissioners have spent general fund money on trails and have assisted local townships with the biking and walkable communities activities. And I think those are great things. We got to get away from just jumping in the car and just going down the street and driving back. And especially for those folks that that love to bike, I think we should have those facilities available for our community, not only for health reasons, but for less traffic on our roads, less traffic pounding in terms of repairing our roads. And I support the public beta system that for seniors. That's a great way of getting around the community without having to rely on someone to drive you around. So, you know, the whole concept of, you know, not just jumping in a car, I think we should support as a community, and the state should too.
Thank you. This is a yes or no question. Don't hesitate to answer it quickly if you choose. Okay. We'll be starting with Mr. Schmidt. At least one of you is currently affected by term limits. Do you support the concept of term limits?
I think I'm the only one affected by term limits. So that's, well, yes to the affected by term limits. Do I support term limits? That was decided by the voters of the state of Michigan, and I respect the will of the people. I think, though, that you could modify. We do have the most restrictive term limits, and I'm willing to look at it. But throwing it out wholesale, no, I don't think that would be appropriate because that would be going against the will of the voters.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia.
I also support the concept of term limits, but I do have some concerns that right now the way it's set up, we have state representatives, for example, what I'm running for. You get in, you have a two-year term, you run again, and you're out in six. And my concern there, I think that perhaps we could be flexible with that. Maybe we create longer terms to give you time to really establish and really work hard for your community. Ultimately, you know, the ballot box is a pretty handy term limited as well. But yes, I do support term limits, but I think there could be some flexibility in how we build them so that we can retain institutional knowledge for longer. And if somebody's doing a really good job and the voters want them there longer, let them keep us longer.
Thank you. Mr. Inman.
I certainly support term limits, and the only reason we're standing here today is because of term limits. You know, back 10 years ago, whatever, they kicked that thing in, you know, you had people serving for 20 or 30 years, and they had PAC money, they had war chests, and there was no way anybody can compete and run against, an incumbent. This gives a fresh new face in the legislative process. Every 6 to 8 years for different candidates, gives them another opportunity to serve the public, which is really an honor. So I would not be changing limits. If I had been there to begin with, I would have just done 8 years across the board for everyone. As my opponent has said, 6 years was a little too tight. 8 years would have been more appropriate, but I will live with the six.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi.
Well, part of the problem with term limits, as I see it, is that, as Betsy mentioned, that people get down in Lansing, they don't really have a chance to learn how things are working, and as soon as they do, they're out of office because they've been term limited. So what ends up happening is that the lobbyists end up running the show. So that is a real serious problem, and people say, well, we should get rid of term limits, and I'd say, well, we should get rid of lobbyists too.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia, we'll begin with you. How will you protect women's reproductive rights?
Well, I'll stop voting to take them away, for one. That's pretty straightforward. You know, I grew up actually in a very conservative household. And one of the things that was pounded into my brain that I've actually really retained, even running as a Democrat today, is that big government doesn't belong in the most personal decisions of your life. And the way I see it, with intervening between a woman or a girl and her doctor, when it comes to the most personal and difficult decisions of her life, that is exactly the place that big government and politicians do not belong. So I would begin by rolling back some of the laws that have been so invasive to these decisions that women and girls need to make, and then I would fight any efforts to continue to erode women's rights.
Thank you. Mr. Inman?
This is a very personal issue for me. I am pro-life. I am endorsed by the Michigan Right to Life organization. I believe life starts at inception and ends at the last breath that you take as a human being. I think adoptions should be the way to go if someone does not wish to continue on with a child. And there are incredible stories about adopted individuals that have become national figures in our not only in our time but in our history. And those people would have never been there unless the adoption process would have been there for them. So I am pro-life. I'm proud of it. And I think we should protect the sacredness of life when it starts and hold it until it ends.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I have the NOW endorsement, but I also have the endorsement of the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Michigan. And I agree with Betsy, but I would like to make one clarification. I am really, really opposed to the concept of talking about women's health rights. These are human beings' health rights. The government has no right to interfere in any health care decision. That's up to the patient, if you will, and that doctor. And if they need to bring in the spouse and their family or their minister, the government has nothing to do with that. There is a law in the country called HIPAA. Nobody's supposed to know what happens. That's the Health Insurance Portability and Protection Act, something like that. The government has no right to interfere in the confidential discussions between a priest and a parishioner, a lawyer and a client, a doctor and a patient, a spouse and that mate, period.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt.
I am pro-life and have been endorsed by Right to Life of Michigan, and that's where I'll leave it.
Thank you. Next question, Mr. Inman, we'll begin with you. What do you plan to help Michigan adapt to climate change?
Okay. That issue came before the County Commission about 5 years ago. And it wasn't even on the agenda, and it got into the discussion about who believed in climate change and who didn't. And I do. I think the omissions and whatever we're pumping into our air and our environment are having an effect on our planet in the long run. And even if you don't believe that, why are we doing it? We should keep our planet clean. And I do believe that, whatever adverse actions that we're doing as businesses and industry, if we're pumping stuff in our ground, if we're pumping stuff into the air that shouldn't be there, it will affect our climate. And I think that's something that we need to protect for generations to come.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi.
Well, I usually introduce myself as I'm Dr. Phil Belfi, but I'm not a doctor like Dr. Dan. Because I actually believe in science, and I believe in the science of climate change. So I'll reintroduce myself there. I am one of a rather large group of people. There's some Native people and some non-Native people. We formed this group called the Chippewa Commons Carbon Credit Cooperative. We're incorporated in the state of Michigan. It's a nonprofit. And as an environmentalist, I understand that climate change is the most dangerous threat that we face, and I'm agreeing with the Pentagon on this issue. They've issued two reports. The biggest threat to our national security is climate change. So our co-op was an attempt to take the sequestration of carbon and actually get some people some money for it, and then take the extra money and build solar panels and windmills and all of that kind of thing. We're still in the technical feasibility phases of this, but climate change and the climate generally The environment is my number one issue.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt?
The environment, Northern Michigan, they go hand in hand. I'm very proud to have the League of Conservation and the League of Conservation Voters endorsement, because as we look at business, as we look at homes and the need for power in this state, and we will be facing a shortage of it soon because we do have the oldest fleet, power generation fleet in the country, on average of 50 to 60 years old, we need to look at new power sources. And that's why I strongly support an all-of-the-above approach. And whether you're looking at, some of the technologies now, scrubbers and some of the new coal-fired power plants with sequestration, some of those latest technologies would have been used at the Roger City plant. But that didn't seem to work, so we need to look at other options, whether it's biomass and, again, making sure that we have the proper scrubbers and capture of carbon there, and also using wind and solar and using those. I did support PA 295, the 10% renewables by 2015. We're looking at other options with legislation both coming up and in next session. And I think it should not only just include Michigan, but looking at those alternative energy options that are on our borders, whether it's Wisconsin, Minnesota, or as I was discussing with the Cloverland Co-op director, the opportunities for hydro in Ontario, making sure that we have power from those different sources throughout the state.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia?
It's really simple. Science should inform all of our state legislatures' decisions when it comes to energy and the environment. And unfortunately, even if going to Lansing, frankly, as a Republican right now, you are going to blend into and fit into business as usual, which ignores science and really has been taking us backwards in terms of our environmental record and the kinds of damage we're doing, allowing, stormwater damage to our Great Lakes. I believe that we need to move as quickly as we possibly can towards as much clean, renewable energy in this state as possible. Climate change is scientific, it is real, and it is human-caused. We need to take some responsibility for the impact we are having, not only on our environment now, but the environment that our children are going to live in and our grandchildren, seven generations. So we need to, I believe, utilize Michigan's manufacturing might and skills to lead instead of lagging behind on our production and manufacturing of wind and solar, et cetera. And certainly we need to ramp up support for energy efficiency. We really need to take a lot more responsibility as a state for the impact that we are having on our climate, and science, first and foremost, should inform
Thank
our
you,
energy
Ms.
and environmental
Kofia.
Policy.
Would you, we'll start with Mr. Belfi. Would you support a moratorium on new or additional charter schools? Why or why not?
I would support a cap on charter schools, and I would even go further. I think that public dollars should never go for private profit.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt?
I did vote to remove the charter school cap. I think that the opportunities that every child should have for education is critical. We've seen how the charter schools have worked up here. I do believe in greater transparency and accountability, and we've seen that. It's something that the public schools have had to go under. We're working to make sure that the same thing, they're held to the same standards that public schools are held to, and, because they are public charter schools. But I felt that it was important, especially choice, and we've unfortunately seen sometimes that need down in southeastern Michigan. And so I felt that removing the cap allowed more flexibility for districts and for parents to make the ultimate decision on what's the best education for their student.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia?
I was reading, I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal, there was a piece recently, I think it was last year, investors met in New York City, and they were sort of salivating at the next big thing, the next big place to make an awful lot of money. And it was the charter school movement. Because of removing the caps on charter schools and not holding them to the same standard of transparency and accountability with your tax dollars, Michigan now has 80% of its charter schools for profit. They're run by for-profit companies. And what that means, there's nothing wrong with making a profit in the private sector, but you know what that means is that their primary goal is not it's not so much to make sure that your child gets the best possible education. It's to make sure that as many of your tax dollars go into their private coffers as profit. I believe that's fundamentally wrong. You can't mix those two. Kids deserve for us as state potential state representatives to actually look out for their best interests and not allow them to be seen just as the next profit motive. So I absolutely support putting a stop to that.
Thank you. Mr. Inman.
Well, I've never heard of this per-profit organization or organizations that are owning and operating charter schools. I've never heard of it. Charter schools were set up. Most of them are set up in Southeast Michigan. A lot of them have challenges because of the kids that are going there. They didn't get into the public school system. They didn't make it. We have charter schools up in the Northern Michigan market that are doing really well and have great students. So the charter schools have a part of a challenge. I think we should have some limit on charter schools. I don't think we should put charter schools up to the point where it puts risk to the public school system. And the other point I want to make on this is that charter schools are supervised, for the most part, by major universities in the state of Michigan. They have the fiscal and the oversight over these charter schools. And, you know, if you believe in the education of our universities, then you know that they're being properly supervised on the charter school basis. They're also receiving the per student amount, just like public schools. So I don't get this profit situation. So,
thank you. Next question will begin with Mr. Schmidt. What is your perspective on the trend toward privatizing areas of our common life, for example, education, incarceration/justice, parks and recreation?
I think privatization serves a role. I do not believe that public safety should be privatized, although within the prison system we did look at privatizing the food service. Obviously, for you, it's pretty fair to say that it hasn't worked out as initially planned, but we did need to introduce and take a look at it. But again, that's the job of the legislature. We looked at it as an opportunity to privatize that portion of the correction system. If it works, if it doesn't work, then we can come back and visit that. Concerning our parks and recreation, I think that the land should be remain public, not sell them off in that sense. But if there's programming that can be done, whether it's by a for-profit or a nonprofit organization, for example, as when I was served on the County Board of Commissioners, the soccer fields, those organizations are nonprofit, they're run. That I think they can do a much better job than county programming. So I think when it's appropriate, yes, privatization. But as a wholesale looking at corrections, no. Public safety, no. But components within that, I think it can be looked at.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia.
I have a couple things here. One, it's important to realize in a state that, 48th out of 50 states for our economy right now and job growth, it's important to realize that when we privatize, that's taking away good jobs. And I know people. I actually went and spoke in 2012 when Kingsley Schools, they privatized their food service, their busing. I know those mostly ladies who lost their jobs and then were offered them back at a fraction of what they'd been making. So it's important to recognize that privatization has a very serious cost to families and communities and less money, you know, lost into the economy. Also, privatization of particularly prisons really troubles me, because think about that concept for a minute. This is another big money-making scheme for investors all over this country. Privatize prisons, and then what do you have? You have a profit motive attached to keeping those jails, those prison cells full. And they lobby hard for tougher sentencing, which translates into they get to keep people longer, and it's your tax dollars that are paying these private for-profit companies to keep people in jail. I think it's really important that we really look closer at this issue.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman.
You know, I'm not a big fan of privatization in the government arena. We have done it a little bit, but I agree that it does take away from people's livelihood for a small savings over a long period of time. And, you know, we have had public-private partnerships in Grand Traverse County where, we supply the land, for example, on parks, and then these community groups come together and they actually operate the program. So, you know, there's cost efficiency for the local governments. But there was a private prison in Michigan that opened up down north of, or south of Traverse City. and has eventually closed because it was so poorly run and inefficient that they eventually just closed and left Michigan. So I'm not real high on privatization, but in some cases, in small pockets of local government, it might be appropriate.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi?
Well, as I said, in the context of the charter schools, no public money should go for private profit. That's kind of like a given. So privatizing of, here's an idea. People like privatizing. Let's put a toll booth at the end of your driveway. Everybody has to have one at the end of their driveway because we've privatized that process. Or maybe when you go buy a hamburger, you're going to have to pay the private company to inspect that food that you're going to be eating. They privatized in Walkerton, Ontario. They privatized the testing of the water, and 9 people died. We can't afford, not only economically, but we can't afford to lose control, that public control of our public dollars. No privatization, in my mind, is justified.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia, we'll start with you on this one. Do you support adding LGBT to Michigan's anti-discrimination law? That's the Elliott Larson Act. Why or why not?
Yes. It's a civil rights issue. It's not appropriate to discriminate against people for who they are. And I'm going to add to that. I support marriage equality, and I think that it's important to recognize that for the 5 seconds that it was legal in Michigan, some of the first people who went to be married were some of the top Republican operatives in this state, a gentleman and his partner who had been together for decades. Michigan needs to get on the right side of history in respecting people's civil rights. So, yes, I support it.
Thank you. Mr. Inman?
All right. I think we need to be specific on this legislation and what is going down in Lansing. And this issue has been brought up, and it really deals with people with alternate lifestyles and discrimination for employment, hiring, firing, and the way they're treated in the workforce. And bottom line is it's not in the legislation now. It should be added. People should not be discriminated against. They have their personal lives. Leave them alone. It has nothing to do with their work environment, their performance, or any other matters of their job. Leave them alone. Let's get it in there and make sure employers are treating people right.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi?
Well, some people have accused me of wanting to repeal the Elliott Larson Act because I say we really don't need the law. Our Constitution says we have to treat everybody equally. So if we're going to have an Elliott Larson Act, it should simply say all citizens in the state of Michigan will be treated equally, period.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt.
As we look at that law, we do need to take into account people's personal and religious freedoms, their beliefs, that as we look at any legislation that's been introduced, I know that there has been some already, and there will be some after the November 4th elections. I do believe, though, that people should be, especially in the workplace, judged on their performance, how they work, what they do, not necessarily on them personally and how they choose to live their private lives. And it's sad that we do have to regulate this, but we do need to take into account people's religious freedoms, too.
Thank you. We'll start the next question with Mr. Inman. What are your thoughts and or position on the merits of considering a vote on a bill such as Representative McMaster's that would change the way electoral votes are counted during the lame duck session?
Okay. I believe there's this thing has just recently came up in the legislature, and I think the heart of the question is, you know, during the election of the president of the United States, you have this electoral college, and right now the question is if a candidate wins the majority of the vote, he takes all the votes from Michigan. And the other end is, well, maybe we should split that up among the two candidates and proportionally give those delegates to the national convention, okay? And I'll tell you what, you know, I haven't given this the final opinion yet because it just came forward to me here just a day or so, but they have both sides to it. If the Republican wins, you want all your votes. If the Democrat wins, you want all your votes. The fairness is, probably the fairness is, the bottom line is, you know, the proportionate votes should go to the national delegation. I have not made a personal decision on this one yet, but that's the basis of this whole discussion.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi?
Well, many years ago, people may remember the name Zoltan Ferency. Anybody? Zoltan Ferency was, just before he died, he was instituting a petition drive in the state of Michigan to have a proportional representation, a unicameral proportional representation. If that would have passed, for example, if Wayne gets 45% of the vote and I get 55% of the vote, we go down to Lansing together and we exercise our 55 and his 45. That's what the Republicans are trying to do. They can't win elections unless they gerrymander the districts, and they can't win elections at the presidential level unless they mess around with the Electoral College. My argument would be, I don't like the Electoral College, quite frankly, because it gives disproportionate weight to those smaller states. But that's the system we have, and we should just leave it the way it is, unless we can come up with a better idea, which I would think is, whoever wins the popular vote, that's our president.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt?
This legislation has been introduced before, I believe, by Representative Pete London. At the time, I was not in favor of it. I have not read the new bill that has been introduced, so I'm not going to say how I would vote on it right now. But in the past, with Representative Lund's bill, I was not in favor of it.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia?
No, I don't support it either, and I'm particularly concerned because I see this as a whichever party gets power in a state, if they're in charge of the redistricting, they have this habit of gerrymandering to their own advantage. And so I believe before we even look at this broader question, we need to have a nonpartisan, truly nonpartisan redistricting commission. Both parties have shown they cannot be trusted to not rig it to their favor. And so I believe that is the thing that needs to happen first. And so I would oppose any change in the way we do electoral college votes, certainly until we really get a fair redistricting process in this state. So that's my position.
Thank you. Next question, we'll start with Mr. Belfi. What do you think are the biggest challenges to fair elections?
The biggest challenges to fair elections, quite frankly, is the amount of dark money and money that is flowing into these races, hundreds of thousands of dollars for a House seat. It's beyond comprehension. So that would be our number one way. We need to get the money out of our elections and return that process back to the people.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt?
I believe that we're very fortunate to live in a state where we've had both Republican and Democratic secretaries of state who have done a good job in running our elections. I believe that our local units of government, our county clerks, our city clerks, our municipal clerks have done an excellent job, too. I think that we do have a very fair approach and a very honest approach. We've taken steps to make sure those people that are not allowed to vote, make sure that people who are not registered voters, who are foreign nationals and such. Can we strengthen those? Can we always make sure? Do we need to remain vigilant? Certainly. But I think Michigan has long enjoyed a history of fair and open elections, and we'll continue to work to make sure that we have that tradition.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia.
We have a pretty serious issue with fair elections in Michigan, I would say, and around the country, and it is tied to the removal of any restraint on how much money can flood into the political process. We're rapidly approaching a situation where unless you can afford to self-finance and spend more than most people in this area make in a year or more on your campaign, or unless you are beholden to big special interests who can line your coffers with hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's difficult to even be heard. Because when money talks, the loudest, those of us who can't write a six-figure check or hire a lobbyist, we're the ones who are not being heard on the issues that matter to us: roads, schools, jobs, college tuition, the things that everyday taxpayers pay our taxes to our representatives because they're supposed to work for us. So I believe certainly addressing the issue of money in politics, having real campaign finance reform in this state is vital. We also need to make sure that we get rid of laws that discriminate against students and people of color, people who are elderly and have a difficult time getting to the polls, are actually able to easily access. I actually support making voting a holiday. It's that important. You're electing the people who are going to represent you.
Thank you, Ms. Kofia. Mr. Inman?
Well, I certainly think we need a lot of changes in our election process and campaign finance laws. Like I said before, I had two candidates pump combination of outside money of over $100,000 in combination that I had to combat to as an individual, as a candidate, to get my message out. And I just got flooded out by media and direct mail. A candidate doesn't have a chance when you're constantly bombarded with eight mail pieces from every day from every candidate that's running, plus robocalls and direct media contacts. So it is a challenge. The other problem is, how do us as candidates get to you? We hit your doors. Not everyone's home, so we have to spend money. We have to spend money, and I have spent my personal money as my commitment to let you know who I am and what I stand for and what I want to get done in Lansing. I put my personal money on the line for that, so you would know how to vote and you would know more about me. So that was my personal decision.
Thank you, Mr. Inman.
And
next question, we'll start with Mr. Schmidt. Do you support hydrofracking in Michigan? Why or why not?
As we look at new technologies for fracking, I do support fracking in Michigan. There are the new technologies that are coming out there. I think that Michigan has had some of the most restrictive and most responsive laws concerning the oil and gas industry. I think we're only second to California in terms of the number of regulations, but I think it's been a very good thing. It's the appropriate thing to do for our oil and gas industry. As we look at some of the new technologies, I have great confidence in our DEQ as they monitor those, that also great confidence in our universities and the scientists and engineers that deal with this, and that as we move forward, we continue to make sure that the industry itself, and Michigan does, and especially northern Michigan, does enjoy good paying jobs and has very responsible drillers and explorers. I believe that moving forward, yes, it is a good thing, but we do need to make sure that they're acting in a responsible way.
Thank you. Ms. Kofia?
One of the things that really bothers me when I read about the arguments pro-fracking is it is often purported as something that's been around for 60, 70 years. It's been going on without incident. And the reality is that horizontal hydraulic fracturing is a new technology. And as a new technology, we don't really necessarily understand the science behind what's happening. What we do know is that it's millions of gallons of freshwater draw that are used to drill these holes for private companies' profit. And then that water is not returned back to our water tables. It is gone. So that's a big concern for me. I would support a halt to horizontal hydraulic fracturing until we can really do a study and understand the science of what we're doing and whether it is, in fact, safe. This is personal for me. I grew up in Kalkaska County, which is one of the hot spots for lots of profit being made for some private companies there on hydraulic fracturing. And so I know people who are seeing their well drop feet, not inches, feet, and property values dropping as people don't want to buy land that has a fracking pad right next door. They don't want the heavy truck. So I have some serious concerns about fracking.
Thank you. Mr. Inman?
Well, I think it's already been said that there's in the industry, particularly the gas industry, those folks need a place to store their store their supply and their inventory, and that has been an area where they have been doing that, and it's been done on a safe manner, supervised by the DEQ by the toughest standards in the country. I'm not aware of any incidents that have occurred with that process. However, I am not in favor of dumping hazardous materials in the ground that could potentially reach our water system, our basin, river basins in the bay. I don't think there should be I think there should be a guideline that, you know, within so many 50 miles or whatever of a bed stream or a water stream, we're not going to be doing these types of activities to protect, you know, our environment.
Thank you. Mr. Belfi.
As I mentioned before, I'm involved in a lawsuit that would prohibit the diversion of water. There are alternatives. I was at a meeting in Bayview where an industry rep said, well, they can use salt water, brine, and we got an ocean of brine under here. They don't need our water. They could also, and they're not very happy about this, they could bring it in from someplace else if they want, but they can't have our water. And the third thing is, it is against the law. It must be safely returned to the basin. That's what the law says, and they can't do it. So even if the DEQ says it's totally safe, which I don't agree with, it is still against the law to use our water. They can't do it. And I was at another meeting where they said, the DEQ said, we've never had an accidental spill. And everybody just burst out laughing because they deliberately spread that stuff on our streets as dust control, deliberately.
Thank you. The next question, we'll start with Ms. Kofia. As a legislator, what would you do to encourage bipartisan cooperation to ensure that government accomplishes the will of all the people?
Well, first of all, it is incredibly important to me, knowing that I would be elected to represent the 104th District, which is made up of people of all political affiliations. I have a responsibility. I have a job to do, and that is to work on the things that I am hearing at these couple thousand doors. I've been, you know, talking to folks. They want action on roads. They want action on their kids' education. They want action on good-paying jobs, not just low-wage service industry seasonal jobs. And so that's the most important thing to me. It's not about a party label. It's about you're there to do a job. And so are the people around you. The other legislators from Northern Michigan, many of them are Republican, but they have a job to do too. And I believe it's incredibly important that we return to what was a better time in Michigan, where representatives understood that. They did not focus on hyperpartisanship, and they did not allow big special interests to motivate them into gridlock. They were there to do a job. Your tax dollars would be paying me, and I would be there to work with across the aisle on all of those issues.
Thank you. Mr. Inman.
Great question. This is the heart of my campaign. One of the biggest things that I believe that hopefully I can go down and at least make some noise on. When I go to door-to-door, people are tired of the fighting, bickering, and non-cooperation between the two parties. And it's either their way or the other way. And there's very little relationships and communication. And people are fed up with it. And this is the big thing I want to go down for. If I can get down there, I want to try to make a difference. I want to see if both parties can get together, talk, and at least compromise on issues that are important to us, like roads, schools, jobs, veterans, our environment, and get decisions done and make them happen. And they have not been happening. We have to have a different culture down there in Lansing, and the newly elected officials are the only ones that are going to do it. You have my promise that I will do everything I can to work with both sides of the aisle to come up with common sense solutions and get things done.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Mr. Belfi.
Well, I guess Democrats are really nice people. We like to compromise. Sometimes we compromise with ourselves even. But the situation in Lansing today, the Republican Party refuses to compromise. They're in charge of the State House, the State Senate, in the governor's mansion, and they are not in the mood of compromising. If you do find a legislator who says, well, maybe I should go across the aisle and talk to those other people over there, like Frank Foster, what happens, the party, whatever that might be, says, no, you better not do that because we're going to put up a Tea Party guy against you and you're going to lose, and so you better toe the line. toe the line, and it's not, again, it's the big money interest. We have to get the big money out of our system. We have to return our democracy to us as people who are elected by the people, for the people, by the people, of the people, not the corporations.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt.
Having had a record that includes significant bipartisanship, and it does draw you primaries, and I see a friend of mine out there, and he knows what I'm talking about, it is a challenge. But there is a lot of things that get done, whether it's completely controlled by the Republicans or Democrats, because within both parties, you have different groups that have different interests in there. It's not all about special interests. You're all special interests in one form or another. You know, I've had people say, oh, there's no big money. You don't represent me. And, well, yes, I do still represent you. And I can tell you who's down in Lansing and that represents you on a daily basis that I talk to. But it is incumbent upon me as your state representative, and I've worked with many of you that I know that haven't voted for me, but I'm still your representative. I still work with the Democrats, and we've come up with many, many policies and bills that we've passed in a bipartisan fashion that have, and I've had both signed by Governor Granholm and by Governor Snyder, and that's what I'll continue to do, is work to find those solutions that best serve Northern Michigan and the entire state as a whole. I've done it for 6 years, and I will continue to do it as your next state senator.
Thank you. That ends our questions for tonight. The candidates have been on the spot for the last couple of hours, and I'm going to give them just a second to breathe here. But we'll start with Mr. Schmidt giving closing statements. They have 1 minute each for their closing statements. We started with Ms. Kofia and went this way. We're going to start with Mr. Schmidt and work in the opposite direction for the closing statements. So after that, we'll have a closing, and then you can applaud, but please hold your applause. Mr. Schmidt, thank you.
Thank you, Ann. And again, thank you to the League of Women Voters and for all of you coming out tonight and to everyone up here on the panel. And for those of you that are currently putting yourself out as elected officials or currently serve as one, you know what the job entails, and it is a difficult task. I just would like to say that I appreciate the opportunity that I've had to serve you as a county commissioner, as a state representative. And again, understanding, having grown up here, moved back, raising a family, having been a small business owner, and again, serving as a public servant, it's a very special job. It's one that I hold dearly. It's one that I respect greatly and will continue. Oh, okay, I did not. 30 seconds there. But one, again, that I think I have earned your trust. You know where I stand on issues, willing to listen, willing to meet with you. You know, I've knocked doors for 16 years. We've all knocked doors, and I've lost a little weight because of it. But I think that I will continue to be there as your next state senator and would ask for, please, your vote this November 4th. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Belfi.
Well, as I said in my introduction, I've been involved in these issues for 40 years, and I am very, very anxious to continue those efforts as an activist, an environmentalist, and as a feminist in Lansing. What I see in Lansing right now, what I would like to see reversed, is I see the current administration and legislators declared a war on women. They've declared war on our schools. They've declared war on our school teachers. They've declared war on our poor people and our sick people and our elderly people and our seniors, and I'm sick of it. I think we need change in Lansing, and I hope to be a part of that change. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Belfi. Mr. Inman.
You know, coming here today and being a participant up here, you have to wonder, you know, what is the most significant thing that you came here for? And it's to understand the issues and to get a grasp on, you know, who you really think will best represent you in Lansing. I made a personal decision about a year ago to run for this office. I've been my whole adult life I've spent in Grand Traverse County. I've spent most of my career in helping small businesses in the banking industry and being a public servant for 22 years on the Board of Commissioners. I love this area. I want to represent this area. I want to represent you. I want to let you know that you have my trust. If you have anything you want to speak to me about, call me. Please do. I want to be accountable, open, and transparent. I want to be your candidate on November 4th.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Ms. Kofia.
Thank you. And thank you, yes, to the League and to each of you for being here this evening. This is an amazing opportunity. I don't believe that the 104th District can afford more of business as usual. I don't believe Michigan can afford more of business as usual, because business as usual means cuts to our kids' classroom education. It means not stewarding our Great Lakes and our natural resources the way we should. It means elected officials who are more beholden to their party and to big special interests and their money and their lobbyists than they are to the people of this district. I decided to run because I see this crisis of elected leadership that is fast fading away from us in the direction of the siren song of their biggest donors. And I decided I wanted to do something about it. I wanted to run to be the kind of representative who knows every moment of every day who I work for. It's the people of this state. We are running a campaign with only individual Michigan contributions. No party money, no special interest money, no out-of-state money. I am accountable to the voters, and I will work every single day for the voters of this state, because that is what we need and deserve. And I am excited for the opportunity to represent you. Was that a stop? Right there?
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I would like to ask for your vote November 4th. I will be there to represent
the
people.
Ms. Kofia, I appreciate it very much that you have been on stage for 2 hours. You've done a great job, candidates. Thank you so much for participating.
Good job. Very good job.
And regardless of the outcome in November, I also want to thank you for your interest in participating in public service like this. League members who put this together have spent weeks in making it work so well, and I certainly appreciate their efforts. And audience, you've been great. It's been wonderful. So thank you. Please fill out your evaluation forms to help us make our next forums better. And if you are looking for more information about voting, please go to the online voter guide at vote411.org or pick up one of the print voter guides right outside the door. Be sure to vote in November. And then one plug, if you are considering purchasing a holiday wreath, the League has to fundraise to cover our costs for this type of event. So please consider purchasing a wreath from the League of Women Voters, and you can get more information out there. Thank you all for coming, and remember to vote November 4th.
And I'm going to be hanging around. Anybody wants to talk to me? There's some literature out on the table, too.